on vital issues. Tonight's subject, the new black politics. Tonight's guest, Democratic Congressman John Conyers of Michigan. He's temporary chairman of the Black National Board of Inquiry, the group that may decide which way the black vote will go this year. You speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Collect Night Call's national phone number, area code 212-749-3311, or in the New York area, 866-5010. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening. In 1964, for the first time since Reconstruction, the black vote made the difference in the South. It provided the margin of victory for President Johnson in several southern states, including Florida. In 1968, for the first time ever, the black vote will probably make the difference for whoever wins in the North as well. This is due in part to the continuing black migration from the South to the northern urban centers and the increased black self-awareness that's been a byproduct of the various black power movements. Until 1932, the black man traditionally voted for the Republican Party. Since then, however, he has consistently supported the Democratic Party. There is considerable doubt as to which party black people will support this year, and there is even considerable doubt that black people will give their unified support to either party. But this year, for the first time in history, a group of concerned, knowledgeable, and nonpartisan black leaders have gotten together to evaluate the various presidential candidates and make specific recommendations to black voters. It's called the National Committee of Inquiry. It was formed less than a month ago and includes such leaders as Mrs. Coretta King, Stokely Carmichael, Sidney Poitier, the Reverends Ralph Abernathy, Jose Williams, and Andy Young, Floyd McKissick of CORE, and Harry Belafonte. Its temporary chairman is Congressman John Conyers of Michigan. Congressman Conyers is a Democrat, running unopposed this year for re-election from his Detroit district. He was the proponent of the Full Opportunity Act with 12 sponsors, a $30 billion program to provide full work opportunities in America. The National Committee of Inquiry intends to interview every presidential candidate, including George Wallace. Congressman Conyers is standing by in Washington to answer your questions and share your comments and conversation about the new black politics. You may speak to him direct by calling our national phone number, which is area code 212-749-3311. And, of course, you may call us Collect. That's national calls on area code 212-749-3311. In the New York area, call us at 866-5010. Local calls again at 866-5010. Congressman Conyers, good evening, sir.
Good evening to you, Mr. Del Shields, and it's a pleasure to be on your program.
And as always, a pleasure to have you, sir. Congressman, I understand your panel will announce its preliminary findings before the Democratic and Republican conventions and its final recommendations well in advance of Election Day. Now, have you interviewed any of the candidates yet? Which you have interviewed so far, and when will your group meet with the others? 1, 2, 3.
Well, Del, what we've attempted to do is begin the kind of massive research that's required before we can confront any of the presidential candidates. There have been those that have sought to come before the committee, but until we have done the research, that is to analyze their record, if they have a voting record, their speeches, their claims and promises against a program that we are in the process of putting together, which we consider to be a minimal requirement for those who aspire for the most powerful office in this country, indeed in the world. And what we want to do, of course, is to make sure that we're going to have a presidential candidate who can meet the tremendous challenge that is required here in the kinds of conflict that are confronting every American in this country today. And we intend to do it by interviewing him, by doing an in-depth investigation into his record, and try to determine in all of the political hot air that's now consuming the country, if there is anyone that's really prepared to undertake the massive responsibility involved in becoming president of the United States.
Congressman, The Democrat and the Republican Party no doubt have heard of the committee. Have they attempted to intercede in any way?
Well, individual candidates have, and I hope I won't have to mention their names, but I'm in touch with nearly all of them. We're trying to organize ourselves so that we can have those who care to come before us, where we can then make the final kind of eyeball-to-eyeball confrontation on what they promise against what we think we need as a minimum in this country.
Can you give us an idea of some of the questions you will be asking the candidates?
Well, we've not formulated them, but the issues are fairly obvious in this nation, it would seem to me, on the part of any concerned America. The central issue, Mr. Shields, is whether or not we have among those who aspire to this office anybody who's prepared to meet honestly the massive needs domestically of the American people. And by that I mean whether we're going to be able to translate a number of euphemistically entitled programs into some meaningful progress so that we get at what I consider to be the major issues confronting the American people in this country, which is, of course, the ability of this fantastic economy of ours to, number one, put everybody to work, which should be a very basic notion. Number two, how we can eliminate the ghettos and slums in America. Number three, how we can begin to develop a system of education and educational opportunity in this country that will be meaningful for the millions of youngsters who generation after generation have been denied that rightful opportunity in this country. These are the kind of fundamental questions to which we on the committee are going to very critically evaluate everyone that aspires to be the President of the United States.
You stated earlier, Congressman, that you had not been contacted by the political parties per se, but by various members of the parties, and of course you did not want to mention their names. But in these informal meetings you have held with these members of the various parties, have you been able to get from them any idea as to what their feelings are on these pertinent programs that you are suggesting in areas of work and slums and education? What has been their reaction?
Well, what they have done, these aren't just persons in the parties, these are presidential candidates that I'm talking about, who directly or through their representatives have attempted to contact me. And I've made it perfectly clear to them that in the due course of time, they will be invited to come before the committee, not to meet with me personally, but with the authorized committee who will interview them at that time. And so until then, there's not too much for me to prepare them for, and there's not too much point of me having any dialogue with them. What I see happening as absolutely essential to a genuine political process in this country is that, first of all, black Americans begin to raise their level of political awareness. That is, that they begin to recognize that one of the very important techniques in the arsenal of weapons that we have in this whole concept of a civil rights struggle, or whatever you'd call it now, that the one that we've used very little is the political process. And it just so happens, in fact, that because of this urban migration which you have referred to, and because of the white escape to the suburb, which is characteristic of every major city in this country, there is accruing a new and tremendous political potential in the black communities across America. After all, the votes are where the people are, and the people are in the major cities, and most of the major cities, and I say most, I could say all of the major cities, are at one rate or another turning essentially black because of the suburban trends and the Southern exodus that has been going on for several decades now in the black community. So there is a new base that's being developed, and we have to become aware, critically aware, that each of our votes is extremely important. And what we're beginning now is the development of a new political understanding, and that's why this committee comes into being. After all, there's nobody speaking to what the needs and concerns of black America are. There are political parties, there are regional groups, there are all kinds of divisions, but there's no place in America, and it was in the very, very great genius of Dr. Martin Luther King that we met the Sunday before that fateful Thursday that he was assassinated, that we laid the basic plans for such a national committee of inquiry with myself and my very dear friend Harry Belafonte and with Dr. Martin Luther King and Reverend Andy Young. Now, from there, we're beginning to develop committees locally in every city throughout the nation that will be working in conjunction with the national committee so that we will not be just a group of black Americans in an intellectual exercise, but that we intend to have a very real and meaningful impact upon the presidential election. And this is how we start.
Well, Congressman,
by asking the question, is there any candidate in this nation who wants to be the president who is willing to come up with some new constructive ideas for replacing the patchwork, underfunded programs that will attack realistically the real problems in this nation?
Congressman, you speak of a new political understanding, and just before we begin taking calls from our night call listeners, I'd just like to pose this last question. Should the National Committee of Inquiry succeed, would you not be developing, or would the committee not be developing, a very influential and possibly powerful force in this country to influence the black voters?
Well, for goodness sakes, we certainly hope so, Dell.
Well, if so, is it conceivable that the political parties would just stand idly by and accept this new volatile force?
Well, this isn't the kind of an area where people ask each other what they're going to do. What we're engaged in is for the battle of men's minds and their persuasions. The question is there any group, including the political parties, speaking quite frankly, that are speaking to these questions? After all, I'm going to be invited to Chicago. I assume the Democratic Convention may still be held there. And I will be invited to sit down with Senator Jim Eastland and other so-called Democrats. And we're supposed to be developing a program that is going to win national support by Americans to support the Democratic Party. Well, the Democratic Party is so loaded with outright racists that have nothing in common with the kind of programs that I have for all Americans that I can't think of anything more ridiculous than for me and Jim Eastland to sit down in Chicago and try to work out a program. There's very little that we agree on. And many of the people that support Jim Eastland are very prominent Democrats, and I happen to be in disagreement with them, and I think a great number, numbering into the millions, of not only black Americans, but white Americans, are seriously questioning whether there is any real legitimate basis for us to think that we can even begin to sit down in Chicago and develop a program. After all, they vote against every civil rights program. The programs that domestically would do something to lift people out of poverty, that would improve education, that would create jobs, that would eliminate the slums. I see no enthusiasm on their part to eliminate the widening gulf between black and white America. I begin to question if I'm to serve any valid purpose in the House of Representatives as one of the five black representatives in the United States. What in the world would I be going there to Chicago with them in August for to sit down when we can't do anything in common in the last 3 years that I've been in the Congress?
Congressman Conyers, I'm going to ask you to hold. We're going to break for station identification, and then when we come back, we'll be accepting some of our calls from our night call listeners. This is the Night Call Network in New York. Stay tuned.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Congressman John Conyers after station identification. Call it a social pressure valve, the voice of the ghetto, the voice of disgust, the voice of hope. Call it what you will, it's the voice of the people. Night Call lets people talk, and experts on the phone anywhere in the country or world offer answers to some of the problems. Having a heart-to-heart squawk, at least it gets people talking, first about their problems and eventually to each other. Night Call has a potential cast of 200 million Americans, and we now cover 50 stations in 40 cities. It could just be the most important listening post on the air today because it starts people talking. A program you should listen to, a forum to speak for yourself. If we don't start talking to each other, we'll end up shouting, and there's no telling where we'll wind up after that. Night Call, every weeknight on this station. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Congressman John Conyers about the new black politics. Again, Del Shields.
Congressman Conyers will accept our first call tonight from a listener in Urbana, Illinois, who is hearing Night Call over WLRWFM, and our listener is Mr. Peter Hyde. Mr. Hyde, your question, sir.
Congressman?
Yes, Mr. Hyde?
What will you do if you find no candidate who meets your most rigorous qualifications for the presidency?
Well, that's an interesting question, and we have considered that that is not an impossible conclusion that we could reach. If that is the state of affairs in America, it's a tragic condition indeed, and we're going to so announce.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Yes, sir.
This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number. Remember, we welcome your comments and your conversations, and of course, you may call us collect. That's area code 212-749-3311. Our local telephone number is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. Our next caller is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM, Mr. Al Rundy from the Bronx. Mr. Rundy, your question, sir.
Hello, Congressman.
Hello, my friend.
Don't you think it's a bad idea to make up the minds of the black people and to group all their votes into one mass?
Well, you're presuming that we have some inherent power of making up the minds of the black people, sir, and I can assure you from my own limited experience that is certainly far from the case. What we're trying to do, rather than make up anybody's mind, is present from the point of view of the black American and the black voter what the facts, what the score, what the situation precisely is, so that he will be in a position to make up his own mind. Our recommendations will not be binding on him or anyone else. They will be there to accept or reject. The point, however, is that there will be an analysis done nationally from his point of view, and if we don't operate, there won't be anyone to present this kind of analysis. We can't expect out of the 23 million black Americans that somehow they're going to be able to do all of the intensive research that this committee could do to speak to all the candidates, to evaluate their records, to cut through their political rhetoric and come to some kind of conclusion. We offer ourselves for that service.
Well, everyone else must, other ethnic group must do that. They must weed out all these different people and make up their own mind. Why do you think the black people can't do that?
Well, that's precisely the point. The black people are uniquely and regrettably the worst position in America. The Italians and the Irish don't have to do that. They were all integrated, and they're not considered to be, as far as I can determine, any particular problem in the American scene. The one ethnic group in America, sir, which is still trying to get into the so-called melting pot, happens to be, as you and I know, Black America. That's what all the disruptions in all the cities are about. That's what the Civil Rights Commission is all about. That's what the Kerner Report is all about. That's what the unemployment statistics and all of the problems that we're studying nationally and locally are all about. The Black man in America is regrettably in a very unique position, and it's toward him that we direct this service.
You wouldn't think that the American Indian is in a worse position than the Black people?
I am very readily in agreement with you that the American Indian is amazingly and incredibly enough less organized and in a worse position than Black America. That is absolutely correct.
And one more question. Who do you
However, think... wait a minute, though. They don't have yet the right to vote, and I am working on legislation that will emancipate the American Indian, and I hope in the view of your question that when this becomes a national subject, that you will encourage and applaud other legislators to help me emancipate the American Indian.
And who do you think would be the best candidate, actually, for the Black people?
Well, this is the question to which our whole committee, which will ultimately involve perhaps millions of people, hopefully, is working toward. If I had an opinion that was committed on this subject at this point, I wouldn't form a committee. I would join his campaign and begin urging Black and white Americans without reservation to support such a candidate.
Now, when will this be made?
Well, we're in the process of trying to reach our conclusions during the major conventions and hopefully even before.
Mr. Rondi?
We're working against a very tight schedule, of course.
Thank you for calling, sir. This is Night Call in New York. We'll accept our next Night Call listener from Memphis, Tennessee. Mr. Chris Turner is hearing Night Call over WDIA. Mr. Turner, your question, sir.
Yes, Congressman Conyers.
Yes.
I want to say, first of all, I think that you'll get a number of calls tonight concerning your program as far as trying to analyze very strenuously the political, the presidential candidates. And I think that you will find that the first caller called in, the white Americans are very nervous or afraid of this for some odd reason or another. They seem not to want us to take to the streets, but then we want to take to the political arena, get into politics ourselves. It seems to want to upset them, too. So I think that this is something that would have to be done because we as Black Americans have to realize that this is the time now, because it will be suicide for the Black Americans not to get involved in politics very actively.
I quite agree with you. I think it's essential that we help our white American friends who are seriously thinking about trying to be of assistance to us, and it's critical that they understand that before we can coalesce with them, we've got to get organized ourselves.
Yes, something I didn't know. The American Indian has not the right to vote?
I don't believe that he has. They're on reservations. They're in a sub-citizen status, and I am in the process of conducting research to introduce legislation that will emancipate the American Indian. Have you ever considered why American Indians are still on reservation?
I've often thought, I wondered about that.
I've begun to wonder, thanks to my good friend Dick Gregory and some of his activities. I can't tell anybody that would call in tonight why American Indians still have to be on reservations and treated like they're a people apart. After all, we took this country from them. The least we could do is make them full citizens at this very late date. I've been advised that we rather frequently break a number of treaties that we've entered into with a number of the Indian tribes in connection with the appropriation of their land. But I would like to see American Indians given full status in this country, that they be broken out of some of the unbelievable reservations on which they are now located. And I think that they should become a real part of the American scene.
Congressman Conyers, I understand that their affairs are completely controlled by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and that's a part of the Department of the Interior.
That's exactly correct.
So, like, this again is the administration, or not just the Johnson administration, but the powers to be who are maintaining the status quo.
Well, I'm wondering if it isn't a form of colonialism that we're practicing inside this country.
Well, let me ask you one last question, Congressman. Do you find much opposition in Congress as far as trying to pass certain legislations and so far to help the minority groups, black, Puerto Rican, and so forth in this country, from northern congressmen as well as the southern congressmen?
Well, now you put your finger on the question that has really begun to concern me, and that is whether our so-called liberal people in this country are really doing the kind of job that they ought to be doing in connection with some of these problems. For example, I've begun to question who some of my friends really are in Washington, and this is without regard to party, of course, in terms of the question that you pose here tonight, sir. That is to say, are liberals causing us more hang-ups than the people that we're supposed to be fighting? After all, a reactionary racist obviously is the kind of person that we're trying to overcome. But what do you say to the liberal who votes for a tax increase, as we did only rather recently, to raise the taxes of the American people right straight across the board, and then agree to a $6 billion cut in domestic programs, and we don't even know where the cut is going to come in? Now, the same liberal that happily went along with a tax increase to the American people, which I did not, because that money is going to escalate the war in Vietnam as we sit over in Paris trying to negotiate, which is an irony that I can't explain to anybody. And at the same time, they knowingly and with full warning beforehand are agreeing and have agreed to a $6 billion cut in which will affect our economic opportunity programs, our poverty programs, our education programs, all of the euphemistically entitled programs that are just beginning to get started. And then we're going to hear moans and wails from the liberals across the country and in Washington who will be weeping and crying and orating about all of the things that have gone wrong. And they're going to then say that this is a shame, this is a tragedy, and the fact of the matter is they participated in the problem.
Well, Congressman, remember, liberals are very liberal and with somebody else's liberties and money in most cases, because most of the liberals are not living in the cities, but in the suburbs, as you mentioned earlier.
Well, what
Mr.
I'm
Turner.
Trying to do with my liberal friends, and I'm by no means, in no way giving up on them, but what I'm trying to educate them to is the fact that we have to, if you're going to be a liberal in a sense, in a good sense in 1968, it doesn't mean supporting little nickel and dime programs that are going to help a few hundred thousand kids when there are millions of people in the same boat. It means that we're going to have some intestinal fortitude in shaping up the massive programs that operate to the problem. I just had, for example, a so-called liberal member of the Congress wants me to help support him in a program that will put a few hundred thousand people to work. Well, there just happens to be nearly 4 million Americans out of work in this country. And I say, what about putting everybody in this country to work and retraining them? So when I formulate a Full Opportunity Act that requires the expenditure of $30 billion that would tear down the slums, put everybody to work, retrain them, well, he can't see that, but if we want to do some little program that would operate to help a small percent of these people, he thinks that that's progress, and I happen to disagree with it.
Mr. Turner, thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you
so very much.
Right.
Congressman Conyers, we'll depart for station identification, and then we'll be coming right back accepting more calls tonight as we continue to discuss the new black politics. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Congressman John Conyers after station identification. Listen to the voices of Night Call.
We're trying to bring about change in this nation through nonviolent channels.
Now, if we cannot do it through nonviolence, there are other forces that are going to lead people down a violent path, and the nation will be destroyed.
Ralph Abernathy on apathy and violence. And a white industrialist says jobs will save us from a racial inferno.
It's better to learn and earn than to burn, baby, burn. Now, these are the changes in attitude that spring from the community as a whole to try to work with these people, not just work on them, and to have industry reach into the area and try to recruit and hire the guy that's qualified and to get the other fellow to take training so he, too, can get a job.
Speak for yourself on Night Call. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Congressman John Conyers about the new black politics. Again, Del Shields.
And welcome to the stations who join us for the second half hour of Night Call, as tonight we are discussing the new black politics with Congressman John Conyers, who's calling in from Washington, D.C. We'll continue with accepting calls, comments, and conversation. Once again, our telephone number, area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number, and of course, you may call us collect. Our next caller is in Columbus, Ohio, hearing Night Call over WOSU-FM, Mr. Robert Levine.
Mr. Conyers?
Yes, how are you today?
As a poor white man, your program, your platform makes a lot of sense to me. In fact, it makes more sense than any of the candidates, I think, for Franklin D. Roosevelt. Why not you and Harry run for president? I mean, black power really is poor man's power, and it seems to me that if us poor people want anything done, we have to run our own candidates. And why not you, Mr. Conyers, be our next nominee in 72?
Well, that's a very flattering idea that has not occurred to not too many people in this country, but I think
I
thank you very much. But I think I see a much more important responsibility devolving around me. First of all, if we can begin to raise the level of political consciousness of black people in America, then we'll be able to unite with the white Americans that are equally serious about these matters. And one of the things that your question suggests to me, if I might state, is that these problems, which are constantly regarded either by implication or otherwise as black problems, that is, the problem of unemployment, of poor housing, of inadequate educational facilities, these are really not black problems at all. They're really white problems, because there are more white people unemployed chronically and hardcore in America than black. There are more white people attending inferior, inadequate schools than black. There are more white people trapped, even incredibly as it seems, in bad housing and substandard housing than blacks. It is true, however, of course, that the percentage between blacks and whites are much higher in terms of black America, but numerically, this is a white problem, and what we're trying to do is get ourselves organized so that those white Americans who are coming out of this racist concept, which has warped so many American ideals, are going to be in a position to coalesce with us, and we'll really begin to put the democratic principles to work in American politics, which I see have had a very difficult way because of so much manipulation, so much power and money and finance that have now made politics a very high-level, difficult thing for most people to get into or understand.
Mr. Levine, thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
This is Night Call in New York. Our guest is Congressman John Conyers. We are discussing the new black politics, and of course, we welcome your conversation and your comments. And our next caller is in Louisville, Kentucky, hearing Night Call over WLRS-FM. Mr. Mullins. Your question, sir.
Congressman?
Yes, ma'am.
I would like to ask you a question. It's a little off the subject now, but you were on it a few minutes ago. Now, the question I'd like to ask is, what are the chances of the American Indian becoming president, and if he does have equal chances with the American citizen, what would he have to go through?
Well, I'm unfortunately unable to speak to this question, ma'am, with any great precision. It's not clear to me whether an American Indian can, even under our qualifications, which are enumerated constitutionally, if he can become a candidate or not. And I'm sorry to say I'm in the process of trying to find that out. I don't think any Indian has ever been nominated for this office, and I'm not sure what their rights as a citizen are. That's one of my basic questions, not only in terms of becoming a candidate, but whether they can even vote and participate in the political process.
Well, how come it has taken hundreds of years for the American people to find out what rights the Indians had?
Well, that's what I'm in the process of trying to determine, and that I promise you that I'm going to introduce corrective legislation to fully emancipate the American Indian and bring him out of this colonial status off the reservations and allow him... I can't understand why we need reservations anymore in 1968. And I think it's time that we face up to this and bring the American Indian into the mainstream of American activity as a citizen.
Thank you for calling. Thank you so much. This is Night Call in New York. Our next caller, Mrs. Tony Beckoff, is calling in from Champaign, Illinois, and listening to Night Call over WLRW-FM. Your question, Mrs. Beckoff.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you very much for having something like the committee that you have to sort of research candidates. Because I, as a voter, voting for the first time, am practically stymied as to information for any of the men trying to get them as a housewife mother. It's rather hard listening to radio and reading in the paper things that people are printing because they want them printed, and finding out the real truth and the background of the various candidates. And I think this is... A real service, not just for Negroes, but for whites, too, especially people who don't know, as I feel I'm very ignorant. And although I look forward to voting for the first time, I don't feel that I'm really capable of choosing a proper candidate because I don't know anything. And I think the service you're providing is the greatest thing that has ever happened to me as an individual, and as I think for all of our people. And I don't understand why anyone who would want to know good things and find out about what is what and who wants things certain way and how people voted in the legislature way back when on what that has made America the way it is today, why people would go against this type of thing. I can't understand that at all.
Well, we're getting quite a bit of support, ma'am, if I may say so. It's the response to this across the country has been most encouraging indeed, and I thank you for your remarks.
Well, I certainly think you're doing us all a great service, and I thank you so very much.
My pleasure talking with you. Good night.
Thank you for calling. This is Night Call in New York. Our national telephone number, once again, is area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. Remember, we welcome your comments and your conversations tonight as we discuss the new black politics with Congressman John Conyers. Our next caller is in Baltimore, Maryland, hearing Night Call over WAMU-FM in Washington, Mrs. Siegel. Your question, Mrs. Siegel.
Yes, Mr. Conyers?
Yes, ma'am.
This is digressing a little, but I've been reading a very interesting book. I've not completed The Algiers Hotel Incident.
Oh, by John Hershey.
Yes.
And yes.
I was wondering whether you could give me any information as to the trials of these three policemen.
Well, I think it's been dismissed against most of them. There's one that's coming up on trial. It's been deferred until about December.
Which policeman would that be?
I don't remember his name. The trial judge made an attack on the book and the publisher and the author, saying that this was some kind of infringement upon the trial of the police officer. And of course, John Hershey and the publishers, through Bennett Cerf, pointed out that they had no knowledge about when the case was coming to trial or anything else. As a matter of fact, the case is a year old. It should have been up a long time ago, in my judgment.
But in other words, two of the policemen were exonerated?
Some of them have been. I have not been able to follow this as carefully as I might otherwise. We've had a very lengthy newspaper strike in Detroit, and this information is just not precisely available to me. If you would write my office in Washington, we will track it down and give you a response.
Thank you very much, sir.
Very welcome.
Thank you for calling. Congressman Conyers, in the new committee, the National Committee of Inquiry, are you welcoming any help from whites?
Well, yes. We've had a number of my friends across the country suggest that we ought to have two committees going, Mr. Shields. Namely, white Americans need the same kind of service as a number of the callers have indicated. Our position, however, in this very initial development is that we're going to concentrate on bringing the level of political awareness up in the black community. This is where we have to begin our work. And we have to begin our work exclusively there, not on the basis of promoting separatism, but on the basis of legitimate need. After all, we're trying to develop responsible black leadership in the communities across this country, and it has to be done by black people. And we have to speak exclusively to the problems of that ethnic group, which has been more oppressed, that figures lower in the economic scales and the problems of this nation than anyone else. And we've got to turn our attention in a rather exclusive way toward them in this political development. Now, it in no way precludes any of our friends from forming a similar committee and to inquire on their own as well.
But you are welcoming them in within the framework of your committee.
No, sir. The National Committee of Inquiry is composed exclusively of black Americans.
There will be no white membership.
No, sir. For the reasons that I've enunciated, there will not be any white membership.
Our next caller is in Des Moines, Iowa, hearing Night Call over KRNT, Mr. Jones. Your question, sir.
Well, my question is this. I am just an observer of this scene and a member of the populace, and I think the congressman is full of a lot of do-good bit, and I'm not mad about it, but to me, this whole business is getting out of context. I, as a lawyer, represent many people and many groups in the Iowa legislature, and I have many friends in the Iowa legislature in various groups. But it seems to me he's pointing for pie in the sky. I don't think any of these people are real practical about politics.
Well, which people are you referring to, sir?
You and others.
Oh, I see. Well, look, that's a kind comment toward me. If you think I'm pointing toward pie in the sky, maybe I am. I don't think that there's anything awfully difficult about putting to work some of the nearly 3 to 4 million people, according to which labor indexes you care to refer to work in this country that are hardcore unemployed. That, to me, is not visionary.
Well,
I don't see anything particularly impossible about tearing down the slums that are corroding and corrupting our big cities in the country.
Well, kind sir, look, I went to law school working for a member of the United States Senate. I understand the rules on Capitol Hill. To me, tonight, when I came in from playing golf, I talked to a real good friend of mine in the locker room at my club. And he was Negro. Now, I don't know whether you should say Negro or what you should say, but he said to me, Mr. Jones, I don't know whether I'm supposed to be a Negro or an African-American or a black or a colored person or what. I think this thing is getting all out of proportion. And if truly, Mr. Congressman, if I could make a lot of money out of all of the Negro people, if I may use that term, that I represent for free, for nothing, for money or not, I would really be the richest lawyer in Iowa.
Mr. Jones and Congressman, I'm going to ask you to hold for just a moment. We'll return right after station identification. Mr. Jones, you may stay on the line. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Congressman John Conyers after station identification. In our city and state, and all across the United States, people are talking about trouble, black and white trouble. Some call it racial tension, or see poverty as the real problem, or say law and order has given way to anarchy in our streets. Most people agree, at least, that there is a crisis, and we are a people with many unanswered questions. This station believes you deserve to ask your own questions and get some answers, or at least opinions, from people who should know what they're talking about. So we bring you Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show where you ask your questions and express your opinions to leaders such as John Lindsay, Ralph Abernathy, John Gardner, Stokely Carmichael, and Sergeant Shriver. Night Call, the new nationwide radio forum on important issues facing you and the rest of the nation. Night Call, each weeknight. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Congressman John Conyers about the new black politics. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our caller, Mr. Jones, who's a lawyer from Des Moines, Iowa, hearing Night Call over KRNT. Our guest tonight calling in from Washington, also a lawyer and a congressman, Mr. Conyers. Mr. Conyers, your response, sir.
Well, I don't understand the significance between all the money you could make off of Negroes if you weren't doing things for them free. What we're trying to do is provide for you, Attorney Jones, and your Negro friend who doesn't know whether he's a black, a colored, Negro, American, or what, is that we're trying to provide him for a basis of his identity. And that's one of the problems we're having in this country. Now, if you think that I'm being visionary about trying to correct some problems that are 100 years old in this country, you may be quite right. It may be that it is beyond the ability of the Congress and of the federal government or of any government in America to put everybody to work in this country. But I can say this to you, sir. A great number of other countries in the world have much lower unemployment rates than this country. There are a number of countries that have done much more toward eliminating slum housing than this country, and I think that there are a great number of Americans that agree with me that these are the kinds of problems that require our attention. Now, if I fail, it won't be because I haven't tried. If we succeed, which I think, incidentally, that we can do, it will be because the will of the American people have said to the government at all levels, locally and nationally, that these matters occupy the highest priority among the problems that we're confronted with. And if we approach it that way, I see no reason why the wealthiest nation of all time can't tear down the slums in the city, tear down the Harlems and the Detroits, and the Watts in Los Angeles, and build decent, first-class, low-cost housing that will allow everybody in the cities a chance to make it in this great American culture.
Well, Mr. Congressman, I think your observations and your views are great, but of course I think your observations and your views are also slanted. I don't think your observations and your views take into account the system of government that we have, the Senate, the House, and so on. As a matter of fact, it would be very difficult for anyone to disagree with what you say and what you think are your goals. But on the other hand, I think, despite those, and I agree with you, I think you're right. I think that everything you said is correct. But I think the American people are getting by damn tired of the poor, the racist, so on. I don't think that comes from meanness. I think they're just getting sick of it. They want things in their place, and I think most people would agree with the goals you have in mind, and I think most good people would go along. I certainly would, and everyone I know would.
Well,
Mr. Jones,
why don't you think, Mr. Jones, as a final question, that the United States Senate and the Congress, which are supposed to be representing all the people in this country, are equipped or able to help bring some of these ideas into some reality in terms of some meaningful programs?
Well, I think, kind sir, they're equipped and they're able, but it's a question where the votes are now. You're a member there. I've been there before, too.
Well, don't you think that we in this country have enough affluence to put to work every American that wants to work and retrain him if necessary for a skill, so that we can eliminate some of the unemployment that leads to crime and leads to a number of other social problems?
Kind sir, I agree, but do you have the votes to get it done?
Well, the votes are going to come from other congressmen and senators like myself, presumably.
Well, do you have them?
No, we don't have them.
Well, as an old-time lobbyist, I always figure that you've got to have the votes.
Well, as an old-time lobbyist, I wish you'd get down here and help me work on a few of these votes, kind sir.
You can't afford it.
Mr. Jones, thank you for calling, sir.
All right.
Thank you so much. This is Night Call in New York. We'll welcome our next Night Call listener right here in New York who's hearing Night Call over WRVR, Mr. Eric Zeus. Your question, sir.
Hello. Hello. It's always a great pleasure to listen to Mr. Conyers speak. I've heard him several times before over the radio. I would certainly like to hear him in person.
Well, thank you very much.
And I would like to add this comment. I feel very, very strongly about this, and that is that a lot of people who know the records of the political candidates, I think, do not have the guts to come out and to say just what those records are. Now, just as Mr. Conyers feels that the war in Vietnam, sapping $30 billion a year from our economy, is taking money that otherwise would be going into solving the race problem, there is a candidate, namely, Eugene McCarthy, who states this, and this man has made some very passionate statements and some very reasonable ones about the race problem. I mean, like, for example, the following. To all, I have to say the same fundamental thing, which will not change tomorrow any more than it was less true yesterday. Racism in all its manifestations is a moral monstrosity. Its ugliness is starkly concrete in the nation's ghettos, the living proof of how the racist mentality has corrupted not only the ideals and principles, but the aims and purposes of our whole society. And then he goes on to say that the black man's claims should be upheld not because there are votes in Harlem or in Watts or on the west side of Chicago, but because the black man's cause is just. His claim on our conscience is justified. And he also says that just as the race problem is a moral problem, the Vietnam problem is a moral problem, and that the two are tied together so tightly that the two can't be separated. And I think that in determining what candidate you're going to support, you've got to realize that you need the money for the good programs, and you can't get the money unless this war stops. And there's only one candidate who has courageously called this war immoral. He said, and I quote, "The most fundamental thing I said about the Vietnam War was that it was immoral. The conviction that it was immoral meant that I had no choice in the absence of anyone else but to step forward in opposition to the war."
Mr. Zeus,
what the political consequences
might have to be. Mr. Zeus, we want to thank you for calling, but I don't think it's fair for you to campaign for Mr. McCarthy. If you have a question to Mr. Conyers,
yes,
we shall welcome it.
Well, Mr. McCarthy will be among those who will be confronting this committee, and I'd like to just point out that we appreciate some of his political statements. We're also inquiring into how much leadership he has given in this great moral question that he's articulating now.
A very good record indeed, going back 20 years. I would like to ask one simple question. And
certainly.
That is, what will be the primary criterion that you will use to determine the candidate that you will select? Is there any, is it possible for you in public to state the means of selection?
Yes, what we're going to do through our operational committee is to draw up a minimum kind of program that will begin to substitute political power, or that will be able to substitute political power for the disruption that's now commonplace in the American slums across the country. And what we're going to do is put together a program of minimum demands and then compare them with the real programs of the presidential candidates, so that thereby we will evaluate not only the programs of the candidates against each other, but against our own drawn criteria.
And are they specific, your criteria?
Oh, that is, it's going to be quite specific, of course.
Mr. Zeus, thank you for calling, sir. Thank you so much. This is Night Call in New York, and I think we can take one short call from Boston. Mr. Kerr is listening to Night Call over WBUR-FM. Your question, sir.
Yes, Mr. Conyers, my question has two considerations leading up to it. One, there's little difference between the political parties as they now exist, as you already observed. And two, there is considerable black and white dissent against this fact, liberal dissent. And I'm wondering about the possibility, in the long-range view, of your efforts beginning this year forming a third party, particularly if, after your examination, you find no candidate, and if your local affiliates become effective in mobilizing local opinion. My question specifically then is, have you ever considered this? Did Dr. King consider this? Or has any of the other members of your panel considered this?
There's been, sir, a considerable amount of discussion around this point. But for purposes of attracting as many people as we can in the short period of time that remains between now and November, we have specifically limited our organization at this point to, number one, inquiring into the candidates for the presidency of the United States in the 1968 election, and that we will not go beyond that. Now,
Mr. Kerr and Congressman Conyers, we thank you so very much, sir. I'm sorry, but time has run out on us. Mr. Kerr, thank you for calling. Congressman Conyers, we want to thank you for being our guest tonight in our discussion of the new black politics, and we certainly hope that you'll be coming back to see us again.
Well, Mr. Shields, the time has been all too short here. I've thoroughly enjoyed your questions and the comments from your listeners from across the country. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you, sir. This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, no riots allowed. Wynton Blount, the president of the United States Chamber of Commerce, he says mob violence cannot be tolerated as an instrument of social change. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, and National Urban Coalition.